hello and welcome again to Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. It's a podcast focused on culture, history, travel, and even a little entertainment from time to time. I hope you enjoy traveling with me and with my guests, my clients, my friends on each episode. Today's episode is the second of two shows that are a bit different. I've again invited my son, Colin Mansfield, to turn the tables on me and interview his old man about life and the things that moved and molded me. Now, as a business coach, podcaster, and author, I invite you to subscribe also to my newsletter by clicking on my website at dennismansfield.com and hit the button on the landing page. I think you'll like that too. I'm Dennis Mansfield.
Thank you for joining Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. As John Hay, one of the most famous men of the 19th century, once said, all the great prizes in life are just around the corner. Let's go there together.
Welcome to Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield, and once again, not Dennis Mansfield. This is the second of a two-parter where I get to interview my dad, Dennis Mansfield. I am Colin Mansfield. My older and better-looking father here gets to be interviewed. How you doing, Dad?
Well, I don't know. I think that's debatable. Youth and virility and good looks and hair tend to make you the better side of this. But I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. And I have to take hair stuff, so my hair would be falling out too anyways. So,
well, see, you know, there's secrets.
I'm 30. I'm getting old. Come on, man.
I know you are.
So last episode, we talked a lot about your history, about your life, about your childhood, and mostly about faith, and that being the thread that sort of weaves through all of our lives, but how that applies to you. What I wanted to do this time is to kind of look at the in-betweens a little bit. We talked a lot about inflection points. I want to look at the in-betweens, business especially, because your job, and I guess you could call it a job, your business, really, is business coaching. And as a business coach, in many ways, you are a mentor to many people professionally. You are also a perhaps somebody who gives advice, perhaps somebody who gives guidance or counseling to folks in various industries and various levels of business when they need it most. What's fascinating to me is that that is never something you intended to do or become. You maybe stumbled is too bumbly of a way to say it. You didn't really stumble into it, but you certainly did not go to college for this.
I walked sideways into it.
Yeah, so I want to first, if you could just tell the story of how you got into business coaching.
Sure.
And maybe start as far back as you need to, because you know, being a consultant is being an entrepreneur. Being a coach is being an entrepreneur. So however far back you want to take it, but I'd love for you to tell that story.
Well, one of the hardest things that you and your siblings ever had to deal with was the question by people, what does your dad do?
What doesn't he do?
And because I, you know, from the... Even at West Point, I had businesses at West Point. I had watch band businesses and tennis shoe business. I was one of Nike's first reps on the East Coast. Tim Ringgold was the first. I think I was the second. Both West Point cadets, you know? And so I've always loved the mechanics of money, of how things can be desired by some and provided by others. So I started a mortgage company when I was in my 20s, owned that, a construction company in my late 20s, owned that. Sometimes it owned me.
Then, whenever payroll came around.
Yeah, oh my heavens, every Friday the hands were out. The other hand had a switchblade in it.
Yeah.
So I learned to make sure that I produced payroll. Starting public policy entity, a nonprofit one, alongside folks on the family. They said, we'll give you our imprimatur. We will not give you any cash. So I had to underwrite all of that. I've always looked at the idea of bringing employees in, helping them grow up. How do I take a man or a woman and look for the best in them? So I've always believed in assessments. The Myers-Briggs assessment is something that's really fascinating because it talks about what could be the case. Mm-hmm. And so I can remember in a construction company that we had that done when I brought a coach in. And then finally, when we did go into ministry with the Idaho Family Forum, I realized that I had to hire people that best suited the skill of ministry while at the same time were productive as employees.
That's a hard, I imagine that would be
very
a hard tightrope to walk.
Very difficult, and on a limited budget. Mm-hmm. So the thing that helped me, that gave me an undergirding that worked from all of the business things up into the ministry time in the 90s, was that there were four groups of people that Idaho Family Forum worked with: legislators, pastors, activists, and then business people. Mm. And so in the business people, I would bring them in, they would fund the work of the Idaho Family Forum, and then I would meet with them as well. Well, what it was because I had coached soccer for years and years, ultimately coaching soccer for over 40 years, a sport I didn't even play at West Point. You know, I did a lot of other sports, but I realized that soccer was something that my kids, you guys, enjoyed, and well, you're gonna coach, get to know it. Well, that coaching ability became what I did with the businessmen and businesswomen. When the decade of
finding the right players in the right positions at the right times.
Absolutely. To score.
Yeah.
And the score, people say, well, it's not all about money. In business, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. It's about the ability to acquire and move money for the purpose of kindness and graciousness and prosperity, not for the sake of worshiping it. Because I taught you when you were younger that money's like water. There's always more. Mm-hmm. And for you to store up water and think, oh, I'm going to, you know, I've got to have this, is a curmudgeon-fashioned way of living your life. And I was going to do that. So when the coaching started, it started back with the Idaho Family Forum. Mm-hmm. When I was done with that, I had the opportunity to go through with Jim Stevens as a business coach, something called the Sandler Sales Method. And it was a biblically based Old Testament method of helping people buy rather than me selling something. Mm. In other words, I mastered that and I became a coach within the Sandler system.
And that was in 2000?
About 2002. Yeah. And then started the business of helping people. And what was great about it was I learned as a coach that in the questioning of people, I could call out the answers in them that they knew that I really didn't know, but I knew they knew. Mm-hmm. So if I could coach them well enough in soccer to do a bicycle kick and be upside down in the air and score, then by golly, I could do that with business. Mm-hmm. When they were upside down, fearing that they were going to lose it all.
Yeah.
And that ended up being something that just launched into, I had really the pivotal point was when a large multi-billion-dollar company asked me to become their coach.
Yeah.
And when I did that, I went, I'm in. And I'm still their coach today, along with a lot of mom and pops and a lot of less billionaire-ish companies.
Yeah, everybody from individuals to large companies, right? Yeah,
so I love it.
I'm curious, because we were talking about faith and how that kind of ties into this, what do you think is, what do you think faith and Christianity lends itself well to in terms of coaching and in terms of almost like, here's the analogy I'll use, is as a coach, a lot of times it seems like perhaps you're not the one digging the hole, but you're coaching or you're talking to the person to dig the hole into themselves to discover, like you're saying, whatever answer or treasure is hidden underneath. As a Christian, I feel as though there's a big part of Christianity is growth, a big part of walking with the Lord is growth, and if you're not growing, chances are you are lukewarm and should be spit out, right, as Jesus says. So what I'm curious about is, as a coach, how do you feel like oftentimes, even inadvertently, with some of these clients of yours who are not people of faith, mm-hmm. Do you feel as though sometimes you're almost digging into their the layers of faith in their own life that they may not even know about.
Mm. Well, you bring up a really great point, and that is that we all have faith.
Right.
The question is, what is the object of our faith? And even atheists and agnostics have faith. They happen to be oftentimes the focus of their faith.
Right.
I can do this. And so what I do is, in asking significant and poignant questions, and being vulnerable and transparent in my own life, it opens up the opportunity for them to investigate. I don't open them. They open themselves. Mm. And when they do, they say, well, yeah, that whole bravado about not believing in God when my nephew was sick and I actually did pray for him. Mm. And then I step away, because my job is not to be a pastor to
sure.
anybody. My job is to be a coach about where they're at. And I actually learned this years ago when I had a company called New Hope Community Health. We started it, and we said we were a faith-based entity, mm-hmm. for profit. Come on in. And so we would have, you know, ex-addicts and ex-inmates. And I remember this one guy, Big Dave, he shows up at the door and he goes, I'm a Satanist. How do you like that faith? And I'm like, cool, come on in. And he's like, what? I said, hey, well, we've got a bed for you. Let's get you going. And in time, Dave was like, you blew me away. I go, why? And he said, well, you didn't try to, you know, beat me over the head with the Bible. And I said, well, why would I do that? Yeah. Nobody successfully opened kindness and graciousness and goodness in my life by slapping
me. That didn't work. That wouldn't have worked for you.
Oh, my heavens, no. Yeah. And so if people are searching and they want to know what the purpose, the reason, the hope that resides within me is, I'm not bashful. I'll tell them.
Yeah.
I don't walk in. In fact, when this billion-dollar company asked me to come in and interview to be a coach, there were half a dozen of us, and I showed up in typical Idaho garb, which, mm-hmm. of course, is where I live, mm-hmm. and I had a sweater on and probably a flannel shirt or something. I don't know. But they said, the guy next to me had a $4,000, you know, silk suit on. The guy over here had a British accent, which is almost the same.
Yeah,
and then the lady over there, and my answer, they said, why should we hire you guys? I don't know that you should. I coach coaches. So if you don't want coaches in your billion-dollar company, do not hire me, because that's what I coach. And if you want people that need to be always lifted up and
coddled
and all, I'm not the guy. And they say, well, this guy over here had the 3-page CV or resume. That guy had the 5-page. I had a half-page thing. It was like it was ripped to show that I was an economic conservative. I don't know.
Fold it. Yeah.
I got it cut pretty well.
Who wants a copy?
Hey, you know, and I think the company just went, you. And I went, okay. Not because I was trying to be that guy. Mm-hmm. It's who I am. And, you know, it works in life. I have great joy in my life. Mm-hmm. I hope people are attracted to that. Voters haven't necessarily been attracted to it.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. I want to ask a question. So, it can seem as though, we talked about Keith Green and the fieriness of his ministry and of his music. As a Christian in business, you have had to come to the, and you almost said it offhandedly, but you've had to come to the realization that everywhere is the mission field, mm-hmm. but there is tact to that, mm-hmm. right? There is a time and a place. Mm-hmm. And I think as evangelicals, especially, we can almost get to, especially when it's from the pulpit, a very like, it's very easy to say you should be evangelizing to everyone all the time. Mm-hmm. But in the real world, there are opportunities that present themselves to do that you can take, and there are maybe times where it is not wise to do that. And maybe there are times where you would think it's not wise, but actually it's the right time as led by the Holy Spirit. So mm-hmm. it's muddy. My mm-hmm. point is, I'm curious for you, how have you had to navigate going from fiery, evangelical, you know, you're going to come to know the Lord, or you're going to burn in hell, to now being a business coach and letting folks share their faith, the object of their faith with you, mm-hmm. and sometimes not stepping in and going, well, let's talk more about that because that's not what you're getting paid for. Mm-hmm. How do you make that work?
Well, I think when someone goes to that level and opens it up, I'll say, well, tell me more. That's interesting. Then I'll ask a question, how has that impacted your business? Mm. I always move things back to business. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what that was like when you fired so-and-so. What was that like? Mm-hmm. What turmoil did you go through? And I let them tell me. I live in a world of questions. I do not live in a world of statements. And that's been the biggest change in my life. Mm. And I think that questions can be wonderful, can't they?
Well, it's funny you say that because we were just had a family evening of playing games, and my niece, Amelia, says, let's play a game where we all have to only ask questions. Mm-hmm. And we went around the room, and all of us realized we're bad at asking questions, and my dad was like in his element, like, yeah, bring it on. We're like, okay, we get it, you win, let's play another game. Okay, let's talk about politics. So some, including yourself, have referred to you as a recovering politician.
Indeed.
Certainly, politics has always been a part of your life, of our family's lives. Mm-hmm. But we have spent now a podcast and a half episode talking about your life, really not about politics at all.
Not at all.
And so what I want to do is first, from a high level, ask you a question, which is, do you think Christians have a requirement? This is Dennis's opinion. In the opinion of Dennis, mm-hmm. this is your show, so mm-hmm. feel free to share whatever you'd like to share.
Thank you.
Do you think Christians have a requirement to be involved in politics, mm-hmm. in the opinion of Dennis?
I think that there are two words that have a distinct difference. One is politics and one is government. I believe that we are citizens of the United States of America. We, by that duty, are responsible to be involved in government. Mm-hmm. We pay our taxes, we show up at city council meetings, we communicate, and then we either win or lose in whatever that vote is. Politics, on the other hand, is something that's all involved in the getting to the point of governing. And we're not all required to do that. We're not even required to vote. One of the sad things about America is that a lot of people do not vote. Mm-hmm. Some vote more than once. Anyway, but that's okay because they're dead. The reality is that it's a shady, dirty thing sometimes, yeah. oftentimes. And I've come to the conclusion after four decades of helping men and women get into office and being chief of staff for legislators and being lobbyists, that this side over here is in a sense, and ought to be, repugnant to many people.
The politics side?
The politics side. Yeah. The governing side is the little boy standing at the rope line watching the senators and vice president and president of the United States show up and realizing they're just people.
Right.
And giving grace to these guys, these men and women. This side, there are times where I've been involved and I have been brutal in races. I remember a time for a man that he's since become one of my best friends. He was the speaker of the California Assembly. His name was Pat Nolan. Pat Nolan eventually went to jail, went to prison, came to know Christ through Chuck Colson, and then came out and is now, he helped found Prison Fellowship and Justice Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And he's living in Arizona and doing a fantastic job. But when he was at the worst of the political side of life, I was right there with him. Mm-hmm. And we were running races in the 1980s, and we had a candidate who we had written a letter. My husband, Bob, and my Bob is this, and Bob is that, and da-da-da-da, and we've all seen them. They're called wife letters.
Yeah.
And we gave it to Bob, and Bob goes, oh, Barbara's not going to like this. And Pat and I are like, come on, Bob, suck it up. Yeah. So Bob took it over, and Barbara didn't like it.
Vetoed.
She vetoed it. He brought it back. And I'm sitting at the desk. Bob's sitting where you are. Uh-huh. Pat's sitting here. And Bob goes, we're not sending the wife letter out because of Barbara. And Pat explodes. And he goes, do you know how much money I've put into your race for this? And this letter's got to go out. Uh-huh. And Bob stands up, and I'm right in between the two of them, and they're like spitting on each other. Uh-huh. And Bob goes, do you know how much money I've got invested in Barbara? At which point, Pat and I just started laughing because it was the best answer. Yeah. Of course, quit being an idiot over here and start being a good and godly man.
I feel like there's... That's a good distinction for you to make, but I feel like it's very muddy for everyone out there, especially now, where for those that aren't actually involved in politics necessarily or involved in government, where they vote, they pay their taxes, but they aren't, you know, going out and campaigning on behalf of someone. Everyone, it seems like, everyone has an opinion on politics, has an opinion on the right way to do things. Mm-hmm. And those opinions have become very heated. Mm-hmm. The exchanges of those opinions, I think, have ruined relationships and friendships. And I, as a Christian, I've always felt as though I have an obligation to be involved, but I also have an obligation to love. Mm-hmm. And that means loving those that I disagree with. That means... perhaps of maybe not avoiding the debate, but having, this is too much now. It's mm-hmm. it's no longer about the principles now we're getting into. It's personal.
Yeah.
As we start to wrap up, what do you think is what I just said? Does that ring true for you? Mm-hmm. And in modern today, talking to the folks listening to the episode, watching the episode, that say, you know, that's all fine and nice to say, yeah, I'll be involved in government, but not politics. But that's kind of impossible now. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
I think that the essence of government is that it's like going to an accountant's conference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You want to fall asleep? Go to one of those.
Yeah.
It's all about the movement of tax money.
Mm-hmm.
I said this to you from the time you were a little boy. Politics is
follow the
movement.
The money,
you follow the money. And in government, it's where that allocated tax money goes to. That's it. The idea of yelling that you're pro-life or that you're pro-abort is meaningless. It's what are you funding?
Mm.
And so what's happened is in the great American debate over the last number of presidential elections is that it's the political ickiness has been relegated almost to a religious fervor where people who don't even know what they're talking about feel that they're personally, because of the gender politics or because of some other form of politics,
identity politics,
by golly, this is my hill to die on. It's like, you know what? Shut up. This isn't what we need to talk about. Mm-hmm. Quit beating me with your identity politics, and let's look at where we're spending the tax money to help. Well, okay, that sounds good too, until you get to the point where I am a fill in the blank. I am, and the point is that I've realized is that there's an ebb and flow of politics. And they'll realize at a certain point that identity politics will have no real bearing, mm-hmm. and it will decrease. I've done this for 40 years. I've seen the tax issue with Proposition 13 be huge and then go down. I've seen the abortion, pro-abort, be up, it's down. It is the flow, the sine and cosine of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're at a heated moment. You mark my words that within 7 to 9 years, we're going to see it diminish, and we're going to have a time of calm. We've seen it in the American body politic with the Calvin Coolidges that have come in, and you know, where it was duller than dishwater.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I think at one point wasn't there a war fought? can't get any more hot than that.
Yeah, and what about the years after that?
Right.
Which here you've got this dynamic of the Civil War, but then you move through and you look at the guys that came in after. You even look at the guys that were the presidents like Millard Fillmore and others beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
It was as dull as you could get.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, by the time Lincoln was president, there were only two secretaries that worked for him
mm-hmm.
in the White House. And that was because they increased it by one person.
By 100%.
100%. And so I'm not a big believer that where we're at right now is where we're going to be.
Yeah.
And so I try to keep the main thing the main thing. And when it comes to politics, I know that, and we talked about this even off camera, that I have no anticipation of being a candidate ever again. It would have to be the strangest confluence of things that would come up that God would have to show me and people would have to show me, because I love what my life is now. Mm-hmm. I love being able to communicate. I love having people of different opinions come in and show in the discussion that there are things we can't agree on. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be, like we're fighting the Super Bowl.
Right.
Or something, or the College Bowl. It's like, shut up, Why don't you just be nice? Why don't I just be nice? Why don't we both just shut up? Mm-hmm. And I think when we get to that point, we can laugh at ourselves. Because certainly when Pat was laughing and I was laughing and Bob started laughing, because guess what? Barbara was right.
Yeah. I last question that I have for you, I think, is tying all of this together and on the political side of life, you've run for office several times. Mm-hmm. You have ran campaigns for others. You have been successful. You have been unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. When you look back on your childhood, on getting married, on becoming a Christian, on moving to Idaho and being involved in politics, but from a faith side, and then moving into becoming a candidate, do you think that being a politician, or having that, maybe not being a politician is a bad way to put it, having that woven throughout your life, would you say that overall that has been a something that you look back fondly on, something that you look back on and say, I'm glad for having those experiences? And the reason why I ask this is because I think a lot of people today, when they look at politics, they look at it as almost like a gross area to be involved in. Mm-hmm. It can be very divisive. It can be very depressing, I think, for a lot of people. Yeah. But when you look back on your life and you see how politics is one of those strands woven in, do you have any, one, do you look back on it fondly and two, do you have any memories that you can share that you would say, this is a good example of why I'm happy to have been involved in the things I was involved in, and why I would encourage others to be involved in their communities?
I think that there are three examples mm-hmm. to illustrate. One is when I was a little baby boy, I had the honor of actually being on your grandfather, my father's shoulders at the inaugural parade of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Mm-hmm. It was his reelection. It was January of 1957. And I have vivid memories as a little one-year-old of being on Dad's shoulders, seeing a big black car and a bald-headed guy and an old lady-looking chick. And I just remember that. And many years later, I asked my sister, Kathy, the older of the seven of us, why do I have this memory? And it was Kathy who said, we were all standing there when President Eisenhower's limousine came up and had to make a left. And Dad saluted the President of the United States. And you were on his shoulders, and I pointed at you and pointed at Dad and then saluted him back as a five-star general. I went, wow. So somewhere early on was this image in my mind. The second was the rope line, being able to be 9, 10 years old and see that these guys were just people trying to help people. Mm-hmm. And that was at the height of the Vietnam War. And so the idea of normal, and then for me, making a decision to run for United States Congress, normal. To run for state Senate, normal. See, for me, that was the bent that I was at. The Bible says that we're to train up our children in the way they should go. And when they grow older, they will not what? Depart. They will not stray away. So in my strain of life, my tree limb was always towards, circumstantially, towards something involved in government or politics. So for me, I think the whole thing has been a blast. Mm-hmm. I've loved every minute of it. Have there been times where I've had, you know, losses where I went, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had some wins that have been fantastic. And when I look at the men and women who've gone on to do things that I had a part of, you had a part of, we as a family, Nate, mm-hmm. Meg, I think Meg is the only elected official in our family, mm-hmm. ran for precinct committeeman and won.
Yeah.
to be able to do that and go, this is why we're Americans. We're American citizens with the opportunity to serve in government.
Well, you think about every elected congressman or senator, with few exceptions, their first race, their first campaign, it was a startup.
Yeah.
You know, everybody started from a position of like, I guess we'll see how this goes. Mm-hmm. And I have very much felt that working on races with you, where the folks who have gone on to become these big politicians, but you remember the conversations in the back room where they were pulling their hair out going, I don't know if we're ever going to be able to.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that level of context, awareness that you always provided to me of like, look, these really awesome people, and this isn't just in politics, this is in life, right?
Yeah.
In anybody who's famous, anybody who's a big wig, big time, are all people. And mm-hmm. In that sense, the American dream is the ability to ascend, mm-hmm. right? While at the same time keeping what's first. One thing that I'll end with here and just say is we talked a lot about your past and your present and what you've been involved with. Something that I just want to tell you is I am deeply grateful for how you as a father have always put our family first. Mm-hmm. There have been times where you have had opportunities to run for office, to take jobs that would have split our family, and you chose not to do that because it was most important to be close to home. Mm-hmm. We talked about Nate's death and how that impacted everyone and your leadership for our family through that. And in many ways, we're all still dealing with grief. You can't lose somebody close to you and not feel that for the rest of your life. It's impossible. So I just want to thank you for your love, for your leadership, and for being a great dad. Mm-hmm. For everybody else that's listening in and watching, thank you for listening into the Call-In Show. Just kidding. It's just around the corner with Dennis Mansfield.
I don't know. It sounds like I'm going to make a switch.
Please go check out my dad's books. You know, my dad's an author. He's written several books, both on the fiction and nonfiction side. You can find out more about our family's history, Beautiful Nate, and most recently his fiction series you can find as well with To Trust in What We Cannot See. And coming soon, / maybe if you ask him, you can get your hands on it, Empires of Dirt, mm-hmm. Book 2. We also have a newsletter, and it's a several times a month we send out, my dad sends out a email newsletter. I help do pictures and stuff on it. My mom edits, so it's a family affair.
The technical term is you do voodoo.
Voodoo magic, yeah. So you can subscribe to that and get some awesome stuff in your inbox. My dad's always coming out with very interesting things. If you liked this episode, please share it with friends. Invite them to subscribe, to listen, to watch, and to read. So thank you very much.